Ladies and gentlemen. So, let's repeat from Tuesday, the electromagnetic field, the well-known Maxwell Lagrangian. Okay. F mu nu is the field strength tensor, as usual. A nu is the gauge field. And the equations of motion, EOM. As usual, Maxwell. No term on the right-hand side because there's no coupling to any charge density or charge current. Canonically conjugate fields. Pi lower mu, as usual, zero. And minus pi vector, or minus E, minus the electric field strength. Okay. And again, you see that A0 is not a dynamical field because the canonically conjugate field corresponding to A0, so pi0, is zero. And then there's only one remaining degree of freedom that you have to eliminate. So you have still 3 degrees of freedom, A1, A2, A3, which could be physical, but of course, since it's a gauge theory, the gauge boson is massless. It cannot have a longitudinal degree of freedom. It can only have the two transverse degrees of freedom. So you have to also eliminate one further degree of freedom. And that is usually done by fixing a gauge. Gauge fixing. And we choose A3 to be 0. The Z component, this is AZ, Z component, 3 component, the same. Okay, then we have only A1 and A2 as physical degrees of freedom that remains. Physical and independent. And also then the corresponding canonically conjugate fields, pi1, pi2. Those you also have to take into account when we compute the partition function. Okay, and A3 is 0, and A0 has to be determined, and also pi3 or E3, those have to be determined. In terms of the physical degrees of freedom. We found that they can be expressed by pi1 and pi2. That's what we found. Because you can use basically the equations of motion, which is Gauss' law. You can use this here to express pi3 by pi1 and pi2 by formally integrating in z direction. I don't write down the full formula here. This can be now expressed. This is a functional of pi1 and pi2. And then you can use the fact that E3 is also, what was it? Minus or plus, I have to check. E3 is minus gradient of A0. In z direction, and then you use this result here, and you write A0 also as a function of pi1 and pi2. Okay. And then you have eliminated everything that depends on something. All you have reduced everything to the independent degrees of freedom, and then this is the new thing, is then you can start to compute the Hamilton density as a double Legendre transformation of the Lagrangian. So H0 is double. Double means you transform A1 dot and A2 dot in L0. You transform this, sorry, you replace this by substitution, by Legendre transformation. You replace this by pi1 and pi2. So you have to compute pi1, A1 dot, plus pi2, A 2 dot minus L0. And then you have to make sure that all the time derivatives of A1 and A2 are replaced, yeah, usually by the definition of pi, because remember, pi lower I is f lower I0 is del I A0 minus del 0 AI, or del 0 A, del I A0, or A0, plus del 0 A upper I. And this is the AI dot. This is the one that we need. So you say AI dot equals pi lower I minus gradient in I direction A0, I1 and 2. This is what you do. And of course, all the other variables that are dependent, those you also replace, of course. No, I'm not going to write this down here, but of course, all the dependent stuff has to be replaced formally by these expressions that we had up there. But we will not need them, so you'll see. Yeah, Herr Dulz? Yeah.
Ich dachte immer, die dritte Dimension, also diese longitudinale, steckt in Minkowski-Raum.
Hey, ja. Ja.
Und damit in den Maxwell-Gleichungen.
Ja.
Und wieso braucht man denn dann noch diese Eichtransformation als Nebenbedingung?
Die da?
Ja.
Also Sie brauchen halt immer eine, ne? Eine Eichbedingung brauchen Sie immer. In so vollständig fixierten Eichungen. In vollständig fixierten. Aber es gibt natürlich auch die nicht vollständig fixierten, wo das Ding dann immer noch rumfliegt. So wie Lorentz-Eichung, ist nicht vollständig fixiert. Das Lorentz-Eichung fixiert es nicht komplett. Also wir haben es komplett fixiert. So we fix the gauge completely, so that's why there's this extra condition here.
Wenn man das nicht machen würde, dann würde man auch
das klappt nicht. If you do not completely fix the gauge, there's always some spurious degree of freedom that's floating around, which you have to eliminate later. So I thought this is basically the brute force way to explain how to derive this, and then
the Wieso?
Wieso?
Den Minkowski-Raum, der ist doch wirklich, ja, das ist das Fundamentalste, was es ungefähr gibt.
Ja.
Und die Maxwell-Gleichungen bauen auf den auf.
Ja,
die
okay.
Und dann brauche ich noch was, um ein Objekt zu eliminieren, das auf diesem fundamentalen Zeug eigentlich aufbaut. Das ist das, was ich eigentlich nicht verstehe, aber da muss man wahrscheinlich Stunden lang
rumrechnen. Ich sehe nicht ganz das Problem. Also vielleicht müssen wir uns da mal bei Gelegenheit tiefer unterhalten. Also hier wird einfach nur das, was unphysikalisch ist, eliminiert. Brute Force. Also ich will damit nicht rechnen. Ne? Ich will nicht mit irgendwas Unphysikalischem. Ne, das ist ja Ihre. Sie können ja auch. Sie müssen die ja nicht null setzen. Sie können ja irgendeine andere null setzen. Oder Sie können auch. Ja? Also ich meine, die Wahl der Eichung ist ja Ihnen überlassen. Ist wurscht. Das ist einfach die einfachste Möglichkeit. Die können Sie ja nicht sehen, nicht? Sie sehen ja nicht das Eichfeld. Das ist immer nur bestimmt, bis auf eine.
Wenn ich anfange mit der ganzen Geschichte, zunächst noch überhaupt nicht weiß, dass diese eine Komponente verschwindet, dann müsste ich die doch eigentlich rauskriegen, ohne dass ich...
Aha, ja, okay. Das kann man machen, ja. Und dann kriegt man die falsche Antwort, nicht? Und dann sieht man, dass man hätte man am Anfang schon richtig machen sollen. Und das machen wir ja gleich richtig. Ne?
Das ist das übliche
Gebastel. Ja. Danke. Ja. Ja, das ist schon so. Ja. Ich meine, ich kann ja, natürlich kann ich mit der Theorie anfangen zu rechnen und dann kriege ich das Falsche raus und dann sage ich, was habe ich da falsch gemacht? Vermutlich, weil ich da diese Eichfreiheit nicht ausgenutzt habe. Also muss ich die ausnutzen. Also es ist nicht nur, dass ich die ausnutzen kann, ich muss sie ausnutzen. Das ist vielleicht die Frage.
Wenn ich
genau.
Das jetzt physikalisch verstehen würde, warum das so ist, also nicht nur mathematisch, dann würde ich wahrscheinlich einen Nobelpreis kriegen, oder was?
Weiß ich nicht. Also physikalisch ist es halt so, das Photon hat halt keine longitudinale Polarisation, nicht? Oder keine Freiheitsgrade, die in Richtung des, der Ausbreitungsrichtung schwingt. Gibt es nicht. Ja, ist nicht da.
Der Grund ist aber der Minkowski-Raum und nicht irgendwelche komischen Eichkraut-Transformationen.
Ja, aber schauen Sie mal, das ist ja auch nicht, wenn das Ding jetzt in X- und Y-Richtung transportiert wird, das ist ja nicht so, dass ich hier nur Wellen betrachte, die in Z-Richtung laufen. Ich muss aber trotzdem irgendeins dieser Felder loswerden. Also, nicht? Also auch für Wellen, die nicht in X und nicht in Z-Richtung laufen, habe ich trotzdem, dann hätte ich einen transversalen Freiheitsgrad 0 gemacht. Hauptsache ich mache einen 0, ja? Ich hätte ja auch 1 oder 2 schreiben können, ne? Oder 0, temporal axiale Eichung, hätte ich auch schreiben. Hätte ich auch nehmen können. Wird es ein bisschen komplizierter, aber es geht auch.
Wenn ich einen transversalen 0 gemacht hätte, dann hätte ich ja wirklich Widerspruch.
Sie haben einen 0 gemacht. Sie haben einen 0 gemacht. Dann steckt das aber woanders drin, ja, die Information. Die steckt dann in der Feldstärke. Na gut, okay. Also man macht nichts falsch. Das ist mathematisch hier, ja. Das ist jetzt ist nicht physikalisch motiviert, ja. Also welche Komponente ist mathematisch? Dass ich eine mache, ist physikalisch motiviert, nicht? Dass ich eine Null machen muss, da führt kein Weg dran vorbei. Also in der total festgelegten Eichung, ne? In completely fixed gauges, you have to do something with one of the components of a mu. Okay, so now we have everything to compute this. Yeah? So I keep computing H0. So let me first raise the index. The lower index should be an upper index. So minus. Okay, and the first two terms I can also sum from 1 to 2. And then I write pi upper I. This is this and this, ne? Sum over I. And then AI dot, I use this guy here. Ne? And here I also raise the index. Minus pi upper I. So minus pi I minus del I A0. Okay? So these are the first two terms. And then minus L0, which is the usual, the standard 1/2 E squared minus B squared. Ne? But e squared is, of course, pi 1 squared plus pi 2 squared plus pi 3 squared, which is actually e3, which is a functional of pi 1 and pi 2. Let me keep this notation with e3 squared. No? e3 is a functional of pi 1 and pi 2. I just don't want to write it down, but keep this in mind. No? So these are the independent degrees of freedom that should appear in H0, ne? Because H0 depends on pi and A, not on time derivatives of A. Okay, and then minus 1/2 B squared, but with the extra minus is plus 1/2 B squared. Ne? As always, ne? In H, the magnetic field changes the sign. Okay, so this is almost all we need. So now you see minus minus plus, so plus pi 1 squared plus pi 2 squared minus 1/2 of this. So 1/2 is remaining. In the square, no? In the square it doesn't matter whether the Lorentz index is lower or upper. I don't write it upper because then I would have to use parentheses to distinguish the 1 and 2 from the square. Okay, so let me write it in this form, no? Plus 1/2 b squared, okay. And then minus 1/2 e3 squared plus the last term, sum over I from 1 to 2, pi I del I a0. And to bring this into a nicer form, I can also, yeah, remember, you always integrate over space-time. Ne? In the partition function, there is a d4x. So I can always do integration by parts. If I see some gradient, I can also write this as minus del I pi I a0. Okay? Yeah? plus a surface term, ne? Plus a surface term which vanishes at infinity. And then I can pull the sum in here. It's minus sum over I from 1 to 2 of del I pi I. But this looks almost like the full divergence of pi, except that the third term is missing in the sum. So I have to add this again, plus a0 del 3 pi 3 or e 3. No? But this is Gauss' law. No? So we always said that we're only interested in configurations which obey Gauss' law. And that's also the condition we used. See, there is also a pi 3 here, no? And E3 is also hiding here in this notation. But E3 is just such. Yeah? I used Gauss' law here in this relation. I used the equation of motion. I used Gauss' law to express E3. So the E3 that is in here is always so that this is zero. There's nothing that that is wrong by saying this is zero. Used to express E3 as functional because you still integrate over Z. No? There's a Z integration. Remember what we wrote down last on Tuesday? So it's never wrong to set this term to zero. No? So you only have this guy here. And so I write this now as 1/2 sum over I from 1 to 2 pi I squared. And let me add 1 E3 squared, because then this looks nicer. But then, of course, I have to subtract the full E3 squared, and I still have this last term here, no? Plus A0 D3 E3. Okay. Still okay, no? Still correct. And here, I also do one more integration by parts. No? So this term is also minus E3 del 3 A0. No? But where is it? A0 was computed in this way. No? I integrated this E3 over Z to express A0 as a function of pi 1 and pi 2. So this minus D3 A0 is actually plus E3 times E3. So plus E3 squared. So the last two terms are gone. So the H0 is as you expect. Totally as you expect, right? It is 1/2, yeah, this is also E, ne? So it's 1/2 E squared plus B squared, if you like. You could write it as suggestive as E squared plus B squared. But this is what you usually write down in classical classical theory. But here, remember, we compute the partition function, which is an integral of a pi and e, pi and a. So there are pi 1 and pi 2 here, and there are also pi 1 and pi 2 hiding in e3, which is a functional of pi 1 and pi 2. And then here there is the gradients of a, no? So no problem. Spatial gradients of a. Okay. So I use this form, no? To compute the partition function. Remember, here is the complication. At this point, e3 was functional of pi 1 and pi 2. But you will see I will not have to use this explicit formula because I will always make use of identities and Gauss' law and stuff, which I may because this was used to derive this form. Okay? Good. So far, so good. Now, we already are able to write down the partition function. up to some normalization constant as usual. Ne? There is dimensionalities are taken care of by some normalization. Then I integrate over canonically conjugate field and fields and fields, but only the physical ones. So pi 1, pi 2, a 1, a 2. Okay, and then as usual, exp space-time integration. Yeah. I have to write, in principle, I can write down, so in principle, I could write down pi mu a dot mu, ne? So then it looks really nice and covariant. Ne? But remember, pi 0 is 0 anyway, so this starts at 1. And in principle, there would be an a3 dot and a pi 3, but a3 was set to 0 by the gauge condition, and a3 dot is then also always 0. Ne? So, what I should write down can also be written in this covariant form. Could be, okay. But let's just keep it as obvious as possible that we're doing the right thing. Ne? So this is basically the pi mu a mu dot minus h0. Ne? So minus h0, which I just derived. So minus 1 half pi 1 squared plus pi 2 squared plus e3 squared, which is this functional of pi 1 and pi 2, plus e squared. Okay. Okay, so this is the thing that I have to compute. This is the expression. And now this, in principle, you'd see, ah, great, here, shifted Gaussian. Ne? This is quadratic in pi 1, pi 2. This is linear pi 1, pi 2. I can do the standard quadratic completion trick. No, because there is a complicated pi 1 and pi 2 dependence in this E3. And that I have to somehow resolve this before I can do the Gaussian integration trick. To get rid of this shirt, it's too warm. Sorry. Okay. So the standard procedure is, of course, you introduce a dummy variable, which helps you to perform your goals. I can insert a 1 here. Ne? Somewhere I can insert a 1. 1. Okay. Which one do I want to insert? Well, I want to introduce an extra variable which helps me to eliminate this complicated dependence and then helps me to do the Gaussian integration. And the extra variable is, of course, pi 3. This is why I insisted on writing E3 as functional of pi 1 and pi 2, because I want to have the freedom to introduce a dummy variable which is called pi 3. If I had written pi 3 here all the time as a functional of pi 1, pi 2, I would have to use a different name for this variable. But the trick is still the same. Okay, what is 1? An integration, a functional integration over a delta function. And the pi 3 is precisely, pi 3 should have precisely the value of E3. So pi 3 minus E3 or plus E upper 3, which is a functional of pi 1 and pi 2. Okay? This is what I insert. Good. Of course, now it's not complete. So now I could basically, in the exponent, replace this E3 by the dummy variable. Then at least this would look like a Gaussian in pi 3. However, it's not so simple because I removed the functional dependence from the exponent into the delta function. So I could integrate over pi 3, but of course, pi 1 and pi 2, now I have, they sit here in the delta function, so it's also not so simple. But, of course, you'll see how to, I mean, you may remember all these tricks from the quantum field theory discussion, treating the generating function in ordinary quantum field theory. Okay, so let's see. So what we're going to do is now, we have to replace this delta function by another delta function, which makes life simple, makes life more simple. And then, yeah, you'll see, we will rewrite this delta function then in terms of this Fourier identity for the delta function. And then at the end of the day, you'll see how everything can be nicely done. So at this step, of course, we just have now integration, whether pi 3 lower or pi 3 upper doesn't matter. That's just a minus sign. Eh? So I can write d pi vector and absorb all the minus, infinitely many minus signs, absorb them in n. Then, of course, I have a1 and a2 still. And I have this delta function, which hides the complication. And I could also write minus pi upper 3 if you like. Doesn't matter. It's up to you. Notationally, there's no difference. And then exponential. And the only simplification I have achieved is that the exponential now looks a little bit simpler. Because now I can really write pi vector squared plus b squared. Okay, that's good. So now to this guy here, to this delta function. Instead of this argument, I could also write down a function of E3, a function of pi 3. But then the transformation between these two delta functions entails a Jacobi determinant, right? So I could write delta of f function or functional even. It's possible. Of pi 3. Yeah, let me leave it with this lower pi 3. I could do this. But then remember how this works. So you need, so this f now is supposed to be 0. That's where the delta function has the support. And it can be written as the delta function of where the value of pi 3 is that makes this function 0. Okay? So the root, basically, pi 3. Well, and of course, I want this to be the root. Well, okay. Let me first write it as the root thing, pi 3 star. That is the, so here f of pi 3 star is 0. Yeah? These are the roots of this function. And then, of course, in the transformation, I still have a determinant it's a functional determinant, because these are functional delta functions. So it's functional of f at some point x, pi 3, with respect to pi 3 at y. This is how it usually looks like. So you have to, it's a determinant in x and y, in this x, y variable. So in space-time, it's a space-time determinant you have to compute. And maybe you have to take the modulus to get everything correct with the signs, but signs, I don't care. No? I can always absorb them in n. This works in quantum field theory. It works also in statistical field theory. And then, of course, what do we want? We want this function, of course, so this here is the solution of Gauss' law. So this f here must be Gauss' law. Yeah, so this function here should be divergence pi. Yeah, because from this we computed pi 3. And this is what we set to 0 to compute pi 3. Yeah, and the solution we called plus a3, yeah? Plus e3 as function of pi 1, pi 2. Yeah, so this delta function that we have here will now be rewritten in terms of a delta function of Gauss' law as argument. And then I still need to compute this determinant. This is basically now, sorry, this functional derivative now, it would be functional derivative of divergence pi with respect to pi 3. Okay, this at y and this at x. Yeah, this is the trick. And then, of course, you multiply this determinant to here, and then you replace this delta function. So I have, now I wrote a lot of stuff. So the next line is basically normalization, maybe absorbing signs and stuff. I don't care. A1, A2. Okay, delta function, Gauss' law. And now times this determinant. Né? And of course, I can compute this. Né? This is, yeah, there's one pi 3 here. Okay, namely, this is d1 pi 1 plus d2 pi 2 plus d3 pi 3. And this is where the pi 3 is. Yeah. So if you take the derivative, you have this del z there. And then, of course, this is pi upper 3. This is derivative with respect to pi lower 3. So it's minus del 3. And then, of course, these have argument x. This has argument y. This x on the delta x minus y. So the determinant is easy to compute here. Obviously, it's a diagonal matrix in coordinate in space-time. And you just have to compute this derivative, derivative of the delta function. But of course, in momentum space, these are just a z component of momentum. I mean, if you think about the Fourier decomposition of this thing will just pull down factors of I, k, z. Simple. So we can leave it. So I will just write it like this, and delta function, okay, if you like. If you want to be correct, you should include this. And then we have replaced now this delta function, and then the exponent is the same. Aha. Almost there. Almost there. This is a constant for all purposes of this functional integration. This can be factored out. It cannot be neglected, as in ordinary quantum field theory, where such constants you don't care about. We will see that we need this. This will contribute to the thermodynamics. Why? Because remember that this is, of course, in Euclidean imaginary time, yeah, in the imaginary time formalism. So in this Euclidean time, there are always temperatures floating around. Also, normalizations and stuff you have to worry about. So there were factors of temperature which contribute to thermodynamics. So we don't throw this away at this point. We'll compute it later and then multiply it with the result. Okay, so what else do I have to do? I need one more dummy variable. So one, which is the axial gauge constraint. So the dummy integration is over a variable A3, and I use the gauge constraint here. A3 equals zero, no? Delta function of A3. This is the axial gauge constraint. Okay. In principle, yeah, you could have thought, this will not affect anything here. I just added so you realize this is the same that we wrote down at some later stage in quantum field theory. In principle, it's not really necessary to do this, but of course it makes everything much more symmetric, because now you also integrate over the three components of A. One, of course, is eliminated by the gauge constraint. Okay. So my Z0 is some normalization. Let me omit the primes, whatever. It's some normalization. dP, dA, determinant minus del 3. Yeah, okay, the 1, forget about it. We'll take care of this later. Gauge fixing. Aha, and now I still have this delta function here. What to do with that? Okay. All of you know that a delta function, even if it's a functional one, doesn't matter, can always be written in terms of a Fourier decomposition. For instance, I integrate over the frequency, which I call A tau, and then I have e to the I A tau times the argument, of the delta function. And since it's functional, I have to integrate over my space-time. This is the same as delta of x is integral d omega e to the I omega x, in one dimension. Yeah, there's a normalization here, which I absorb somewhere in the definition of the functional integral, or I absorb it here in this n. Doesn't matter. Okay? Ah, okay. Very good. Now remember that this is a real variable, like the omega here. That's why you have an I here. But of course, I can always write I A tau to be a purely imaginary variable A0. Mm-hmm. So this thing could be written as up to some infinitely many I's from the functional determinant, from the substitution, A0 E integral A0, no I, ne? Divergence pi. And this is the thing that I'm going to insert here. So I integrate over all four components of A mu. Exponential of, okay, now what do we have? Yeah, I have basically pi 1, a 1 dot, pi 2, a 2 dot. I add a 0, pi 3, a 3 dot. A 3 is 0, so I can always add a 3 as a 0. So minus pi times a dot, okay? Yeah. minus because this is lower 1 and lower 2, and I want to write it as this, the true vector with upper indices. And here I can integrate by parts. I can write this as minus pi gradient a0. And this I take together. So it's exponential of minus pi dot a dot vector plus gradient a naught minus this here, pi vector squared plus b squared. All right. Yeah. So here was an integration by part. Sorry that I'm putting this here in between of stuff, but I want to save some space. No? So this is basically this thing here with this integration by part stuff. This is this term here, no? Including the a0 integral, which is here. No? This is dA0, dA3, dA vector, no? This thing here, dA mu. Okay, all clear? Okay, good. Yeah. This here I will conveniently abbreviate as minus E vector, because remember, yeah, the definition of EI was minus, sorry, is minus del I A0 minus A I dot. We had that somewhere. I probably erased it again. So this, what is here, this is precisely gradient of A0, except for the sign. And this is also A dot vector, except for the sign. So the whole thing is minus E. I just call it minus E, not to write down this stuff all the time. Later on, I will resolve it again. But for the next step, I just do this. The next step is the obvious one. You see, because of all these tricks that you did, you managed to get rid of this stupid functional dependence of some field on pi 1 and pi 2. This is all gone. Yeah, the Gauss law constraint. Yeah, so this was the last time this appeared was here. Then it was in Gauss law. But then Gauss law was written like this, and then performing an integration by parts, you have it here. So in principle, it may be hiding here, but of course you introduce so many dummy variables that you resolve this stupid dependence. No? Yeah, so that's it. This is really now shifted Gaussian in pi. No? It's the linear term, the quadratic term. So you can perform it. And there's no temperature dependence anywhere. I mean, now I could go to Fourier space and do this, right? I mean, we have done this before. No? We have done Fourier space decomposition. In Fourier space, these guys are dimensionless. And the normalization is such that all the extra constants that come from the spatial integral, like the V over T, that cancels. No? So in the Fourier space, this was just a completely dimensionless Gaussian, shifted Gaussian integral. Nothing else. So no problem. I can immediately do this shifted Gaussian integral. It gives some constant. So this is again changed. I don't know how many primes you want to use now. It's a mu. The determinant, formally this decouples from the functional integral, but we'll need it later. This is the thing where we still have to worry a little bit. This a3. Yeah, okay, so quadratic completion. So you have pi prime equals pi minus e, I think. Right? This is what it is. Because if you then square it, minus 1 half pi prime squared is minus 1 half pi squared minus 2 pi dot e plus e squared. This is this term here, ne? Minus minus is plus, minus minus plus, factors of 2.5 cancel. So the only thing that is basically the quadratic completion requires to put the 1/2 e squared onto the other side here. Ne? So then you basically just have exponential of plus 1/2 e squared minus 1/2 b squared. Which is L0, no? This is just standard L0 here. With that E here, no? With E written in these terms, completely correct, as it should be. You may also worry, hey, hold on a second. Classically, of course, this is zero, no? Classically, this is zero. But in quantum field theory, this is an independent variable. You have to integrate over this. Fortunately, it's a Gaussian integral. It doesn't matter anymore. Okay, good. Got it. This is the result, the final result. And, of course, you can write it in an arbitrary gauge. Now I call the gauge condition F of A mu equals 0. This is another F. This is not the F I introduced up there, but up there this was just for illustrative purposes. So in arbitrary gauge, you can immediately see what's happening. You get the determinant of the gauge condition with respect to the parameters, lambda, alpha. I call them alpha, lambda. Let's call them alpha. This is the Fadeev-Popov determinant. This is, and then delta function of gauge condition. So this is this guy here, ne? The gauge condition was just A3 equals 0. Then you see, the gauge transformation we did was, this was A mu minus or plus del mu alpha. This was the gauge parameter. And the gauge condition we used was A prime 3 equals 0. Yeah. So if you take the functional derivative with respect to the gauge parameter, then you see there is a derivative with respect to D3 missing. It's partial derivative with respect to D3. Yeah. So this here really gives this guy here. The minus sign is because you lower the index again. Okay. So this is this guy here, and this is this guy, and then the rest is basically integration over the Lagrangian in the exponent. No? This is in arbitrary gauge. Okay, I think this is understandable. No? Looks very similar to what we did when we did the complete gauge fixing in quantum field theory. Okay? Yeah, so then the next step is to compute this now. No? We will compute this. Of course, we will do it in this actual gauge. No? Of course, we can also do it in arbitrary gauge. That will be the homework problem, but we will do it in actual gauge. Since we worked so hard to get this here explicitly, we will use this, no? And we will take a break now till a quarter past or so, no? Short break. Okay, folks, so let's compute this thing now. Of course, here, no, this, I use this form. And of course, I can immediately do the A3 integral. This was just to introduce so that it looks like this in arbitrary gauge. But of course, when I now compute this, I can use it. No? So there is a normalization constant, but it only serves to make dimensions right. I integrate over all fields A0 to A2. A3 I will eliminate with the help of the functional delta. I have to keep the determinant, as you will see. Minus or plus del 3, it doesn't matter. And now, here in the exponent, there is L0. But I have to use the fact that A3 in L0 is 0. No? So I take the form of L0 where A3 is already put to 0. No? So in my L0, make sure that you set A3 to 0 because you performed the A3 integral with the help of the functional delta function. OK, so now let's look at L0 in this limit that A3 is 0. OK, so what is L0? It's 1/2 e squared minus b squared. Sorry. E squared I write again as minus or plus because I square it. Gradient A0 plus time derivative of a vector squared minus b squared. Yeah, b squared we have to also worry about in the next step. Here I have to set A3 to 0. And I will do this immediately. So this is 1/2. So I have to square this out. So this is this term squared. So it's gradient A0 squared. And then there are mixed terms, plus. But this guy has only two components, because A3 is 0. No? So A3 dot is also 0. So only two components. I have 2 times A1 dot derivative with respect to x of A0 plus the same for A2. No? A2 dot derivative with respect to y A0. This is the mixed term. And then I have a vector squared, a vector dot squared. So this is A1 dot squared plus A2 dot squared. And A3 is 0, so A3 dot is also 0. So this takes care of this here. And then I have to write down b squared. OK, and this has, of course, also x component, y component, z component. The x component of, so b1, this would be del 2 A3 minus del 3 A2. I think it's correct, at least up to a sign. But since I square B1 in the B squared, it doesn't matter whether I miss a sign. But this was 0, no? So this is minus del 3 A2. But the minus sign you can also skip because you square it anyway. No? This is B1 squared. B2 squared, yeah, B2 is at least up to a sign. Del 3 A1 minus del 1 A3, this is again 0. So this is 0, this is 0. So it's del 3 A1 squared. And last component, BZ, yeah, this is del 1 A2 minus del 2 A1. OK. And we have eliminated A3, so this is the form we can use. Of course, I can integrate by parts, because there is a space-time integral. So up to surface terms, up to surface terms, which I don't write down. I can write this as minus 1/2. Okay, and the integration by part is done such that these differential operators, which are on the left, I basically pull over to the right. So this would be a0 Laplace a2, a0. So this is gradient dot gradient. And one gradient goes over, one nabla goes over, this gives gradient scalar product. Gradient is Laplace. Gesundheit, Laplace. Okay, here I have I will do it in a way to symmetrize this. So I will not take the two, I will take one of these guys. I will write a1, del 0, del 1, a0. But in the second term, I take the del 1 on top of the a1 here. Yeah? So plus a0, del 0, del 1, a1. Okay? Do you understand this? Is it clear? No? So the dot was always del 0. No? Dot is del 0. And this term is by pulling this over here with integration by part. This term is pulling this over here by integration by parts. And the same trick with the second term. So it's a2 del 0 del 2 a0 plus a0 del 0 del 2 a2. This takes care of this. Okay, then I have these terms here with pure time derivatives, so plus a1 del 0 squared a1 plus a2 del 0 squared a2. And then here, minus a2 del 3 squared a2 minus a1 del 3 squared a1. Okay, and this also has to be, I have to square it and then do my things to the terms. So it's minus a2 del 1 squared a2 minus, because square gets rid of the extra minus sign, minus a1 del 2 squared a1. And then the mixed term I do also in this trick here. The mixed term is also done in this way, no? With a symmetrized version. So plus. Because now minus times mixed term minus is plus. A2 del 1 del 2 a1 plus a1 del 1 del 2 a2. Okay. Yeah. Sorry that the squares and the components are sometimes hard to distinguish. But if you go through it step by step, no problem. Of course, I could use X, Y, and Z to make it even more clear. Somehow I thought you guys were smart enough to figure out what is the 1 and what is a square. And what is a 2, what is a square, sorry. Yeah. Okay. So there are no squares anymore in this formula. Everything is resolved in terms of components. And of course, there's a nice matrix notation now. There is a three-dimensional vector composed of a0 to a1 to a2. Then there's a matrix in between, which I have to write down. And then there's the same guy again, a0, a1, a2. So now, what do we have? We have a Laplace here. Well, this is this term. Let's write down the diagonal terms first. So, see, there's an a1 squared here, a1, a1. There's also one here. And there is one here. So you get del 0 squared minus del 2 squared minus del 3 squared And there's the same for A2. Del 0 squared minus, minus del 1 squared minus del 3 squared. This is always the derivative which does not appear is missing. So in the 1, the del 1 is missing, and in the 2, the del 2 is missing, and in the 0, the del 0 is missing. Okay, and you may worry about the plus sign of the Laplace, because here there's always part of the minus Laplace. Well, A0 is still purely imaginary, so that will flip the sign again, so we'll get the right signs. And then we just have to make sure we get all the mixed terms correct. You see, these two will give you del 0, del 1, and del 0, del 1 here. And these guys will give you del 0, del 2, and del 0, del 2 here. And I forgot to put a check mark on the del 3 squared here. And then the last two terms complete this here. Né? So there's del 1, del 2, del 1, del 2. Okay? No problem. Okay, and of course we compute this in, this is absolutely Gaussian, no? Because this is a symmetric, and if we store all the i's from imaginary time, it's also real. It's a real symmetric matrix. You can use the. Okay, and it is almost always positive definite, so no problem. The only place where you have a problem is when you have constant field configurations. Constants in space and in time. Because then, since you don't have a mass term, like for the massive fields, there would be a zero mode. No? But of course, zero as a constant field configuration is a measure zero in the functional integral. No? I mean, in principle, you have to worry about zero modes. You should worry about zero modes, but in this case, the zero mode corresponds to a photon with zero energy and zero momentum. And we never encountered these objects. No? Zero energy is impossible. Otherwise, how would it move with the velocity of light? How would it travel if it had zero momentum and zero energy? So forget about the zero modes, at least in this application. So we can just do the Gaussian integration, but we do it in Fourier space, as usual. So the A mu, actually the A0, A1, A0, 1, and 2, those are the only guys we need to Fourier decompose. Use the standard normalization for the bosonic fields with dimension energy. And here the Fourier modes, as usual, I call them A sub k. Okay. And then the space-time integral over L0 is what? It's minus 1/2. This is this guy here. And then you have two Fourier sums because it's quadratic in the fields. Here's an A, there's an A. So we have a sum over K and Q, as usual. We have seen this before. And then the integration over X, no, over space-time, gives you the standard V over T times delta, Kronecker delta K minus Q, K comma minus Q. Yeah, as usual. And then the normalization, two factors of this, one from this A, one from this A, so 1 over TV times V over T. The V's cancel, two factors of T remain. Okay? And all we now have to do is write the stuff in Fourier space. So this is A0, A1, A2, Q or K doesn't matter. Let's choose the Q. Then this matrix in Fourier space. Now, these are all partial derivatives. They all act on this exponential, so you can immediately replace this with momenta and energies. And then here at the end of the day, you have the case, the Fourier components of the fields with the K index. Okay, so what is the Laplace? That acts on the spatial stuff. Laplace on this gives minus K squared. K vector squared, no? Time derivative is minus I K zero. Spatial derivative is plus I K spatial component. No? So here in my notes I have a different sign. Why would I have that? Well, I think it is as it is. So minus I and plus I is plus K zero K upper one. Because it's the real derivative with respect to X. So K dot X is as usual K zero T minus K dot X. Okay. Yeah, so plus I and minus I. Okay, good. I have to amend this. Then let's write down the rest. K zero. I hope everything works out at the end. Ah, shit. Okay. K zero, K one. Okay, this is minus K zero squared plus K two. Yeah, plus K2 squared plus K3 squared, but as I can write as plus K squared minus K1 squared, no? Or KX squared. K1 squared. Okay. Here this is plus again. But here you have two spatial derivatives. They have the same sign, so it's minus K1, K2. And also here, minus K1, K2. And here, down here, you do the same trick as in the middle component. So it's minus K0 squared plus K vector squared minus K2 squared. Mm-hmm. Okay, good. So the calculation of Z naught is up to some constant, which is irrelevant. It's still the determinant, the Fadeyev-Popov determinant. This you have to keep for the moment. You have to also write this in Fourier space eventually. At the moment, this is in space-time, so let me write determinant of space-time. And for the other integral, we were already now in Fourier space, no? So we have already replaced the A in space-time by the A's in Fourier space, absorbed all kinds of normalization factors, temperature-independent normalization factors in a normalization, which we drop. And then it's a Gaussian integral now. And this is this matrix B here. This is this matrix here. Yeah? So let me call this matrix B of K. Yeah? And the result of the Gaussian integral over these Fourier transformed gauge fields is B determinant of B over T squared. Don't forget the T squared. See, these have all dimension energy. The 1 over T squared takes up the dimension. So this is, again, dimensionless, as a determinant should be. So it's determinant of B of K in K space, basically. Yeah, so then I can omit this over T squared in K space. And also in 3 by 3 space. No? So it's not only in K space, but also this 3 by 3 matrix you also have to compute the determinant of. But then it's a Gaussian integral, so the power minus 1 half. Okay? And since it's diagonal in K, see here this is essentially diagonal. Remember the trick of changing columns of q and minus q. So this is the product over k, and then it's just the 3 by 3 determinant, this guy, b of k, that you have to compute. And that's it. So now I hope I didn't mess up the signs. Whew. This will be interesting. Okay. I think this is correct, though. No? I mean, you followed this, huh? So you don't complain. I think I didn't make any mistake. I mean, here I flipped signs at some point, but and I don't know why, because but I think it's correct. Because I really every term was integrated by parts, no? So there was an overall change, and then I just kept the signs as they were. Sounds good. Okay, let's see what happens. So let's do the 3 by 3 b of k. The 1 over t squared I can, sorry, the 1 over t squared I can adjust later. No? Every element gets the t 1 over t squared, so I can later on multiply the result with 1 over t to the 6 or something, and then it will be okay. So let's compute this guy. Okay, so minus k squared, now I do the usual Saros rule to do this. So start here and then the subdeterminant here. This is, you also realize that this is minus k 4 vector squared. Fantastic. Yeah. So this times this. So minus k squared minus k x squared or 1 squared. And this is the same, minus k 4 vector squared minus k y or 2 squared. Minus this guy here. Ne? So minus k 1 squared k 2 squared. Okay, got it. We have to be super careful with the signs now. Because here, that's where I made the mistake. I hope we get the cancellation to work out later. Oh, shit. Okay. So now this guy, and then the subdeterminant here. Ne? So it's minus, because it's the 1, 2 element, minus k0, k1. And then it's this times this. Ne? This is k0, k1. Minus k4 vector squared minus k2 squared, minus this guy here, yeah? Which is then plus k0, k1, k2 squared. Plus because of the difference in sign. Yeah? Okay, and then the last guy is again then plus k0, k2. And then this subdeterminant here, which is minus k0, k1 squared, k2, minus k0, k2, minus k squared, minus k1 squared. Okay. I think looks good, no? You followed this, checked it. Okay, good. So now we should see lots of cancellations. Let's see where they are. Here, no? Minus k0, k1, k2 squared plus k0, k1, k2 squared. This goes. Same should happen down there. Yeah. No? Minus times minus is plus. This is minus. Zack. Zack. Okay, and then also here the mixed term will vanish. Ne? When I multiply this out, it's k squared squared minus k squared plus k squared times k1 squared plus k2 squared plus k1 squared k2 squared, which cancels the last one, huh? This guy. Okay. So let's see. Let's see what we get. I hope we get the correct answer. Damn it. Oops. Oh, by the way, this was the exercise, no? Since we are doing exercises on Friday or whenever we want to. I should have said that this is the exercise. I could have, of course, given it as a homework exercise, but we also have to do some exercises here. No? So this is now part of the exercise. I know I didn't structure this very well with, this is not exercise, this is not. It's up to you, no? Since we take this as we should do it, in the university, we take it as it comes. We are free. Okay, so then the determinant is what? Okay, I have to collect the terms then. So it's the minus k squared, and then it's basically k squared squared minus k squared k squared k1 squared plus k2 squared. Okay. So this takes care of this. Then what do we have here? We have plus k0 squared k1 squared k squared. And we have the same here, no? Plus k0 squared, k2 squared, k squared. Mm-hmm. Oh, fantastic. This looks good, because you see, this is the same factor here, and then I have k0 squared minus k squared, which is another k squared. Okay. So I pull this together. Minus k squared, sorry, plus k squared squared. Ah, fantastic. K1 squared plus k2 squared. Okay, great. Now you see, this is also k1 squared plus k2 squared plus k3 squared, but everything cancels. Now, minus, plus, so these two here cancel this guy. So the final answer is minus k3 squared, k squared squared. Excellent. We got it. This is the correct answer, despite my intermediate mistakes here. And then now we have to compute this guy here. Ah, determinant of up to a sign, partial derivative with respect to z. And you all know how to write down determinants, no? Because determinants are usually results of integration over Grassmann variables. And of course, eta and eta bar are my well-known Fadeyev Popov ghost fields, no? As we introduced them in the last semester, last year, or yeah, I think it was 1 year ago, no? Winter in 2017-18. This is how we wrote the determinant. Remember, it's not the determinant to the power minus 1/2 as a Gaussian. It's to the power plus 1. That's how you write this typically. And of course, this is the Fadeyev-Popov determinant that I have to write down in terms of Fadeyev-Popov ghost fields, as usual. Okay, so we know that these guys are Grassmann. variables like the fermions. However, however, they do not, so they obey, so in a second quantized language, they would obey anti-commutation relations. However, they are not physical fields, yeah? So the standard argument that Arno made with you a couple of weeks ago with this Schwinger formula for the two-point function, where you could deduce that these guys have to be, that the fermionic field must be antiperiodic in imaginary time. This cannot be done here. These guys, there is no observable two-point function. So in fact, they do not obey Fermi statistics, although they obey these anti-commutation. So there is no Pauli principle that you have to, I mean, the Pauli principle for these guys is more or less accidental, okay? They're not fermions. They're bosons, anti-commuting bosons. So they have to be chosen periodic in time, in imaginary time, or in this in inverse temperature. Why? Because you need them to cancel spurious degrees of freedom, right? I mean, when you compute this here, you still integrate over one field too many. So A0, for instance, this is one too many. You need to cancel with this Pardieff Popov determinant, you need to cancel degrees of freedom which are too many here. There's still too many degrees of freedom. That's why it's not so simple to just drop this. Yeah? In quantum field theory, we said this is does not depend on any field, so I can drop it. It decouples from the generating function. Here, I need it because you will see it will cancel some unwanted factors in our result. And for that to happen, you have to have the same statistics as for the gauge fields, bosonic statistics. Né? They fulfill Bose-Einstein statistics, although they're anti-commuting. This is a new feature. Né? You did not need this, right, for quantum field theory, but here you need this. It also means that you have the ghost Matsubaras are the even multiples of 2 pi over t, né? 2 pi t. So periodic in this interval means the Matsubara frequencies are the same as for the bosons. So even multiples of pi t, né? Even multiples of pi t. And the fermions usually had uneven multiples, odd multiples of pi t, né? 2n plus 1 pi t. These guys have 2 pi n t. Okay. Yeah, let's compute this now. Of course, there's also a Fourier decomposition for the ghosts. No problem. Here I choose, of course, I mean, they have the same dimension as fermions. It's the same dimension as Dirac fermions. So I choose the same normalization as for my Dirac fermions. The same simple one. Né? And then for the bar, the same. Né? Except, remember, also for the fermions, the psi bar had a plus here in the exponent. We do the same here, because it's convenient. Okay, so K0, so this K0 here in the decomposition is, of course, as usual, minus I omega n, so minus I 2 pi n t. Good. So then it's very easy to compute the exponent up there. You just have a z derivative acting on the exponential. So that pulls you ikk3, né? Or kz, pulls it down. Okay. So still wonder whether there is a temperature coming into play. Yes, there is. These Fourier modes are dimensionless. The 1 over square root of V takes care of the dimension of the eta fields. But from the space-time integral, we still have a V over T times delta. Ne? So this guy here is sum over k, q, delta 4, k, comma q. Because this gives you V over T, V over T, times delta 4 kq. And these guys give you 2 powers of 1 over square root of V. Ah, yeah, okay. So then there's still a 1 over T from the V over T that I have to take care of. And that's how the temperature dependence comes in. And then otherwise, you get an I K3, from taking the del 3 derivative of the exponentials, I or minus, it doesn't matter which one. I think in this not convention, it's plus I K3. And then, of course, eta bar K, eta bar Q, eta K. Naja. So the determinant in Fourier space, if you compute this in Fourier space, up to irrelevant constants, it's also the determinant of, so in K space, determinant of I K3 over T. Yeah? Okay, delta 4 KQ is the K space. So it's, again, since this is diagonal, product over K, I K3 over T. And we will also drop the I's, no? Because these are also infinitely many of them. They can always be absorbed. So it's basically K3 over T, product over all K. So then you put this together with your formula, which I erased. Remember, Z naught was determinant minus del 3, and then what we already had, product over K, minus K3 squared, 4 vector squared over T to the 6, now, so the minus 1/2. And this guy here was now product over K3, or K upper 3, doesn't matter, over T. So I write this here as, let me write this as minus K lower 3. And then I write this as to the power 1/2 squared. Okay, so I can square everything here. Minus or plus doesn't matter. You see, minus K3 squared, or plus, doesn't matter, over T squared to the power plus 1/2, minus K3 squared over T squared to the power minus 1/2. So nicely, this stuff is canceled. So that's how this cancellation of degrees of freedom works. No? So you have this gauge field part, which still has a spurious contribution from A0, which surfaces as the stupid K3 squared factor up there. This is something we don't want. But the Fadeev Popov determinant nicely cancels this, okay? So the final result is just minus K squared over T squared squared, ne, to the power minus 1/2, so this to the power minus 2 over 2, if you like. We always wrote it like this, minus 2 over 2. Up to the power minus 1. Ne? But 1, 2, this minus 1 half is from bosons, minus 1 half. The 2 is from the two polarizations. The two polarization degrees of freedom. So that if you now write down log z, that is minus 2 over 2, sum over k. So it's log of, 1 over So the minus already takes care. So it's just the log of minus k squared over t squared. Okay, good. Good. Yeah. And this is all there is. This is, as usual, minus k vector squared is minus k zero squared, which is plus omega n squared, plus k squared. And then you can do the Matsubara sum as usual. This log omega n squared plus k squared over t squared is the standard boson Matsubara sum that we have done. The two polarizations hide here in the extra factor of 2. So the pressure of this system is, non-interacting system, is T over V log C naught equals minus 2 over 2. If you like this. So let's keep the 2 from the polarizations. And now let's write down the pressure in the continuum limit as for a scalar field. It's like two scalar fields hiding in one gauge field. So it's the standard integral over k over 2 pi cubed. 0 point energy k over 2. Here's another factor of 1/2 here. Plus t log 1 minus e to the minus energy. Energy is just k, modulus k, over t. This is the pressure of a photon gas. This is the 0 point energy, as usual. I hope I have the signs correct. Sorry. Briefly check here. Don't make any mistakes. Yeah, it's correct. I hope it's correct. Yeah. And this is the thermal contribution, huh? Of course, there is a thermal photon pressure, black body radiation. This is the Stefan Boltzmann law that you get from this term. And these two are the two polarizations of the photon. Two polarization degrees of freedom. So this all works beautifully, as you expect. After a long song and dance. And of course, as a homework, you can try to do this now, compute this in a covariant gauge, in Lorentz gauge. Compute C naught in, how was it? I think like this, Lorentz gauge. So F of A mu is del dot A is 0. You can do this in the same manner. Just insert everything. Insert the derivative of the determinant contains the derivative of f with respect to the gauge parameters. Essentially, this will be the box operator then. So basically, you will get a Fadeev-Popov determinant with box instead of del 3. Okay, box will give you not K3 over T, but it will give you the full K squared over T squared. Okay, but you will need this because you have now four A mu's which you have to take care of. So you have to compute a 4x4 determinant. Okay, but essentially these guys will cancel two of the K squared from the 4x4 determinant, and you will end up with the same result. So I don't do this here because it's stupid calculation, but you know, as a finger exercise, you can do it at home if you like. So, took a little longer than I wanted, but I think it was worth going through the step by step. So now, this is basically the cut. From now on, we will leave the realm of non-interacting theories, and we will start to compute partition functions for interacting theories, okay? And the easiest thing is, of course, again, the perturbative calculation of the partition function, which is already interesting in itself. So we will learn a lot of tricks how to do thermal field theory calculations, how to do loops, how to compute loops in thermal field theory. Of course, eventually we have to leave perturbation theory because we'll see that due to the fact that we have also another scale in the problem, the temperature or the chemical potential. Power series the perturbative series, which is the power series in the coupling constant, does not make any sense. Because you can always combine powers of temperature with the relevant momenta in your process to mock up powers of coupling. So you will have a different ordering of scales. So perturbation theory will no longer be in powers of, well, the standard perturbation theory in it was always in powers of g squared, or lambda, which coupled four fields. Powers of lambda, you can count this. This doesn't work anymore. Now there will also be odd powers, like this, and because in principle you can combine g squared with gt. Gt is another scale in the problem. This is all I want to say at this point. So you will get odd powers of the coupling constant, and it looks all kind of weird, but this is all many-body physics now that we are talking about, many-body physics at finite temperature and density, so expect interesting things to happen. So I'll see you next Tuesday, huh? Good. Have a nice weekend. Yeah.